TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Warning. The Outsider's Edge contains strong opinions, unconventional views, and contrarian stances. Listen, if you dare.
Hey, yo.
Ain't nobody really the gorilla. Ain't nobody really the gorilla. I said, ain't nobody really the gorilla. Ain't nobody really the gorilla. Gorilla tactics. Whoa.
As you are brought in by the fire tones of the Tongan and the Bullet Club, with whom we give all deference to, I'd like to thank you for listening to another episode of The Outsider's Edge. We are back. We are better than ever. We're ready to talk that hot shit with you guys today. Before we get going, let me introduce you to myself first. It's your boy Rance, a.k.a. Ray Cash. And I'm with my golden lovers brethren, Mr. Kyle Morris. How you doing, my man?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's a beautiful night. Shout out, as ever, to our missing brother in arms, Mr. Carl Irvin, out there on that press junket for that internationally renowned column, Word on the Street. Word on the Street is that today Carl is in Indonesia spreading the good word to the islands.
Jakarta. They living that good life. Mm-hmm. By the way, Carl has a birthday. We're recording this on Wednesday. Carl got a birthday tomorrow.
Oh, shit. Old man Carl going to be 30-something.
Yeah. Get it, Carl. So, 35?
Oh, 45. I wasn't going to put it out there like that. I don't know what the number is, but I wasn't going to put it out there.
I don't give a fuck. 34 or 35.
But, isn't he only a year older than you? So, like, add a year to how old you're going to be this year, and I think that's how old he is.
No, he's, like, 3-4 years older than me.
Oh.
Carl's old man, yeah.
Oh, Carl old man.
Carl old man, yeah. Well, nobody's older than Rob. Shout out to Rob. But Carl's old man, yeah.
I mean, I'm the baby.
You are the baby of the family. Yes. What's it been, 2 weeks since we talked to the guys, to the people?
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks, you know, some interesting developments happening in the world of the wrestlings.
It's been some big shows. Impact had their big show, Slammiversary, last weekend. This weekend we have Extreme Rules, we have the Evolve show, and we have Fight for the Fallen with AEW, their last show before All Out. So there's a lot going on with wrestling, a lot of big news has happened, of course. I think last we talked to you guys, we mentioned the Paul Heyman and the Eric Bischoff moves. So we've had 2 weeks to see what they were doing. But I want to talk when we start, because we're gonna be all over the place tonight.
As usual,
absolutely. But I want to start with something that I don't think a lot of people are giving a lot of credit to. When WWE made these moves to make Heyman and Bischoff their executive directors of Raw and SmackDown, respectively. And even going back to months before that, when McMahon family came out and said that we're the authority and all that bullshit that came with that, there's been a lot of moves and plans to make things a little different. And it hasn't been consistent as we want it to be, but it's been in plans, little plans. Over the last few weeks, I'm going to name people who have been underutilized or not utilized at all that have gotten a shine in recent memory. I want to talk to you about Cedric Alexander, who, even for how weird and convoluted it was, main evented Raw. I want to talk to you about Maria and Mike Kanellis, who were people thought were banished to a five and now are consistent with the major storyline on Raw. I'm going to talk to you guys about, Nikki Cross, who has become the most important cog of the women's division right now. I want to talk to you guys about Ricochet, who has been main eventing shows against arguably probably the best wrestler in the company, AJ Styles. You know, just these things that we don't give a lot of credence to, but people are being utilized. You can even go to, we're going to talk about this in a minute, Kyle, but we can even go to Drake, Maverick, and EC3, who's getting some shine. You know, the Revival have been reborn as what they've wanted to be this whole time, but basically Tully and Arn clones. They're dressing with the belts and the money and stuff. You know what I mean? The Viking Raiders are getting shine. Like, it's No Way Jose has gotten time on back-to-back shows. Like, they are really going out of their way to reutilize people who have been underutilized. Andrade and Zelina had a major spot. Shinsuke Nakamura won a match on SmackDown. First and foremost, Shinsuke Nakamura got an entrance on SmackDown. That's big in itself. I just want to give a shout out and a tip of the hat to the fact that there is a clear... Shelton Benjamin has some type of... I think he's doing on SmackDown.
He's the new Ron Simmons.
Well, with the eyes, exactly. But, you know, we don't give a lot of credit to WWE when they do things right, but we're quick to always tear them down when they do something wrong. For better or worse, there is a push, whether it's been renewed or new, to continue to reutilize talents that haven't been utilized or been utilized in smaller ways. And we can even talk, we can even bring that into something that I know you'll be happy about. With the new, apparently the reason that Shane McMahon is beginning all this shine is to give it to Kevin Owens, who's now the biggest babyface on the show now. And in his babyface promo last night on SmackDown, he said, and by name, we got people that aren't on the show because you're taking the time up. Apollo Crews, Buddy Murphy, Liv Morgan. Like, he went down the line. So, I'm just saying, give them some credit where credit is due. The company's in good hands, and a lot of these people who you said weren't getting shine, starting to get it again. Aleister Black is finally going to start wrestling again because now his storyline is in full effect. And he's wrestling Cesaro, and you know that's going to be like a stiff dream.
They're going to have a hard-hitting match, and then they're going to both start talking to each other in one of the 12 languages that they speak combined.
Both, exactly. 100%. That's literally what's going to happen in the match. But I want to start the show with that because nobody's talking about that. And that is something, even there's even a real storyline brewing in the women's tag team division. I mean, when's the last time we saw Asuka and Kairi Sane? They were on the show yesterday. So I wanted to give a little shine to that. I'm very pleased that they're starting to remember that they have a full roster again. So,
well, and I mean, it's kind of important because, like, people are going to get hurt. Like, shit's going to go down, you know, people are going to get pushed and it's not going to work or whatever. And, like, then you got to have a plan B. It's kind of hard to have a plan B, as we've talked about. Prime example, a division that has struggled for the better part of a few years now, the Raw Tag Team Division. And part of the reason they always struggled is because there was never a plan B. It was always just whoever the champions were facing the challenger of the month, kind of like the monster of the week in a TV show. Yeah. And once they overcome the monster of the week, a new monster is going to form out of the primordial ooze for them to challenge again. But if either of those people gets hurt or if something happens, like when, you know, the tragedy of Jason Jordan's career happened, when him and Seth were like just getting started with that tag team championship storyline, they were going places and it killed that entire roster because there was nothing else. There were no other teams in that division. So, like, utilizing these bit players is important. You mentioned the Kanellises. That's not, like, a storyline that's building to some, like, main event level pay-per-view match. But, like, that's a C story in the first hour. But they're on the show every week. And it's establishing them. So when you see Mike Kanellis in the Royal Rumble match later in the year, at least people will know who the fuck he is.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that Mike is still doing work on 205 because Mike was doing great work on 205. But, I guess we can start here. I guess the biggest, I kind of omitted them, but the biggest, I guess you can say, group who are benefiting from this renewed push would be Gallows and Anderson and their renewed push with AJ Styles. Gallows and Anderson were guys who were thought to be afterthoughts. You know, they were just happy to get a check and, well, let me not disrespect them by that.
I was going to say, Carl Anderson, like, he went from, like, good shape to, like, holy fuck.
Yeah, he looks amazing. Yes. I bet his hot Asian wife is happy with that.
So, I'm sure she is with that, like, 0% body fat and shit.
It's ridiculous how good he looks. But their storyline mirrored real life. AJ was like, y'all ain't doing nothing. Y'all lose every week. Y'all ain't even on TV. You're just happy about it. And now they all got their edge back. And here we go that for the better part of the past 2 weeks, the A story, some might argue, is AJ and the club versus Ricochet. It main evented last week's Raw. That's huge for a guy. Ricochet is like older than me probably, so I can't call him a kid. But a guy who's been on the main roster for a cup of coffee and maybe a refill, going against essentially the face that runs the place, AJ Styles. Like, there are so many new stories going into Extreme Rules, which is the precursor to SummerSlam, and new faces and new ideas and new things. Even the Bobby Lashley Braun Strowman feud has taken a new turn and has become interesting. I just think we're in a good place right now with WWE, and nobody will say that because everybody wants to complain about Shane.
Well, I mean, you know, less McMahons on my TV screen is always a good thing.
But I know you feel that way, and you're not wrong, but I do think, let me ask you this then. Let me flip it for you and try to get you to think unbiasedly. Answer this unbiasedly. Because your bias is very well received and understood. But I think personally the shows, when there is some connective tissue and an overarching theme behind the shows, they flow better. To me personally. So with Shane being essentially the main authority member who's taken charge, running both shows with his fake ass four horsemen that he has, Elias, Drew McIntyre, and The Revival, and feuding with everybody, now you see the two top baby faces essentially of both shows. And no diss to Kofi and Seth, because they're the champs. But Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns, now you're seeing him going against both, and the feud with him and Roman is ending once, you know, Taker buries everybody on Sunday. But what happened on Tuesday with SmackDown between Owens and Shane, who have a long history with each other, I think that can show to a lot of people who don't like the Shane story and think he's been essentially overstayed his welcome. I think that Kevin Owens' story is using that real-life heat to get something out of that story, and Kevin will be the beneficiary of all of this that's happened. What do you think about that?
I don't disagree with what you're saying. I was just pointing out that I'm not going... No, that's not what I meant at all. I was just saying you had mentioned that people want to bitch about Shane, and I just wanted to reiterate my long-term stance that fewer McMahons on my screen in 2019 is generally a good thing. All of the points that you made, Brother Rance, are perfectly legitimate, valid points. KO is going to get massive rub off of this, 100%. But I still maintain that fewer McMahons is generally a good thing.
How would you feel if Shane beat Kofi for the WWE Championship and Kevin Owens took it off of Shane, leading to a strong run with Kevin as a babyface WWE Champion? Would it be worth it?
I mean, no, but like... You know, Vince is a former WWE champ, so it wouldn't be the most ridiculous thing that's ever fucking happened.
And when Vince won that title, the crowd lost their mind.
Oh, the crowd went apeshit. They threw things at the ring.
Yes.
Threw things at the ring. Because corporate Vince was despised on a level that corporate Shane could only hope to achieve.
I don't know, man. I don't know how I feel about it, because I feel like Kofi's either losing to... Kofi's either losing to Roman, Shane, or Brock. It's very clear.
Buddy, I already told you what's happening. You
I don't believe it. Nope, nope.
You don't want to believe it. I already told you what's happening.
Don't put that bad juju on me, Ricky Bobby.
I've already told you, whether we like it or not, Kofi's getting taken to Suplex City so that on the first episode of SmackDown on Fox Network...
Nope.
Brock Lesnar can be their WWE champion. Mm-mm. And he can main event against Roman Reigns. Because that's what they're going to do.
You're just a stone's throw from Talladega. Don't put that bad juju on me, Ricky Bobby. No.
You know South Carolina and Talladega are not that close, right?
I thought Talladega was in North Carolina.
Right, Talladega's in Alabama.
Oh, well, that goes to show you what I know about NASCAR. Anyway, there you go. I guess a black person from the inner city of Houston wouldn't know about NASCAR. So there you go. I just told him myself. My bad.
I mean, I teach in Darlington, South Carolina, so, like, I got to know about NASCAR. Cause
this is a good point. That's probably the number one sport, yeah. Right behind college football.
No. Like, Rance, Darlington, South Carolina has one of the most famous NASCAR tracks in the country. Like, that's literally all that's there, is the NASCAR Speedway.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, I learned something else tonight. There you go. I know who Jimmy Johnson is. How about that? Will that work?
I don't give a shit about NASCAR, bro. I'm just saying I work in a place where I have to know about it.
I'm just, you know, I can name the drivers. I can't name where they drive, but you know. So let's transition to something fun. Probably the best part of WWE in the past month or two.
Oh, ain't no probably. It's the best part.
Yeah, and something you've been beaming about that you text me immediately said, I want to talk about this. I'll let you out of the floor.
Yo, so can we just talk about how great the 24/7 title is and how amazing R-Truth and Drake Maverick are? And how amazing Carmella and Drake Maverick's wife are. And, like, just everything about it is so wonderful. Because here's the thing about Drake Maverick. For those of you that aren't familiar with Rockstar Spud.
Oh, Spud is amazing.
And camp doesn't even begin to describe the level of ham that he will bring to a character. This is a man who will ham... on ham, he will bring the whole pig. Yep. That's how ham he's going on a character. So the opportunity for him to get this 24/7 gimmick and to like take this lower card comedy act and to just go full comedy with a guy like R-Truth who can also just go full comedy at any time. Just endless, wonderful segments of hilarity that really add some great levity to the show when they need to have transition moments.
So I think originally the concern about the 24/7 title was how are they going to make it different than the hardcore title? And how are they going to use the stip in a way that makes sense in 2019, right? And the thing that R-Truth has done with this title, the things that Carmella has added, you have to give credit to the the idiots running behind them every week. And Drake, what Drake has done, this man got his wife to let him do film an angle on their wedding day. I mean, and first and foremost, we have to acknowledge Renee Michelle is a snack. I'm telling you, she is a midnight snack. She's a brunch snack. She's a right before lunch snack. She's a wake up in the middle of the night and I'm really, really hungry snack. Renee Michelle's a snack. So shout out to Spud for
outkicking marrying her.
Boy, outkicking is, he outkicked his cover so much. Remember the, what's the Tony Danza movie about the Philadelphia trash can? Where he was like the field goal kicker and kicked like 100 yards? Like, that's the type of outkick his coverage that he's doing. So shout out to that, him for that. But man, the level of what they've put into this, everybody involved, it's hats off, man. They've made the championship a viable championship.
Well, and for me, it's a good example of something that I had an old theater teacher who used to say this all the time, and it's really true. When you're having fun, other people are going to have fun. Yeah. And it's very clear that they're having fun. And so it's really, really hard, unless you're just like a humorless curmudgeon, it's really, really hard to watch these segments and not just have some fucking fun.
And Kyle, it's not just the segments on TV. This wouldn't work without social media.
Oh, no, the Twitter stuff, yeah.
Drake and his ever-going honeymoon, that Renee keeps thinking she's going to somewhere special. And he's like, we're going to Newark, New Jersey. We're going to Orlando. She was like, we live in Orlando. It's amazing.
Oh, I just loved that he's so tiny that he was hiding in a crate. And she was just sitting on it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Oh, it's so good. And what do you think about them doing like a final blow off between Truth and Matt and Drake in an actual match at SummerSlam? I feel like that's what it's
going. I mean, I feel like they deserve it. I feel like they've earned that. Even if it's like the first match on the card, they have earned the right to have a real match. And it should be like a lumberjack match, so neither of them can run away, because storyline-wise, it makes sense. And then at the end of the match, they have to run away because the Lumberjacks want the title. The Lumberjacks are all the so people good. Who have been chasing.
So before the show, I told you I had an idea of what I wanted to call the show. We might not call it this, but I wanted to call it the patience episode, because everything we're talking about shows the value of having patience. And the night they debuted the title, it died a horrible death. Everybody complained about how it looked. Everybody complained about how stupid it was. Bobby Roode, Titus O'Neil was the first champion. Bobby Roode stole it. It didn't make any sense. Well, this, that, and the other. If you've shown a little patience and waited for it to be established, you will have seen and understood how amazing this championship really could be. And what it's done for so many people on the card that wouldn't be on the card otherwise. EC3 has built a character off of this stupid little title. You know what I mean? R-Truth has become... R-Truth is the... This is factual information. The most drawing superstar in WWE right now, socially, is Ron Killings.
Everybody loves Truth. It's hard not to love Truth.
Yeah, 100%. As a wrestler and a person.
Yeah. Shit. And I mean, I love Truth because of the Charlotte connection, so like...
Absolutely.
Always. But no, like, that title has been great. And I mean, this is how you effectively use the lower card. This is the smart way to use your So, one effective way to use your lower card is C stories like the Canellises. Mm-hmm. Another effective way to use your lower card is gimmick titles like this that are like fun and allow you to have little transitions in between the show and like. They can be short, and it doesn't have to be a big thing, but it makes sense, and it's a good continuity in between segments.
So months ago, me and you sat here on this very show, and we talked about the positives and the negatives of the company. And one of the negatives we both mentioned were that outside of the top level stars, WWE didn't book a full card. I think they reinvigorated and re-remembered, that's not a word, but you know, how to book their lower card. Do you think they've remembered how to rebook their mid card?
Remains to be seen.
I'm
still in a little bit of wait. And here's the reason I'm going to say that. The middle of the card is meatier. And so, like, if we're building a sandwich here, the lower card is like the bread at either end. And it's real thin, and it's easy to rebuild quickly because I can just get a new piece of bread. It's not that big a deal. I just got to repackage it the right way. And short term, I can get results with that. The middle of the card is where we're starting to see more of the like tangible ingredients. And if my produce goes bad, it's going to take a little bit longer for good fresh produce than it did to just get a new piece of bread.
Change out a piece of bread, yeah. Well, then, that brings the question, what's considered the mid-card in 2019? Because somebody, if you're looking at it from a traditional card layout, one could argue that Styles Ricochet and Roman versus Shane and Drew are mid-card feuds.
I've always subscribed to the belief that within the mid-card, you've got your lower mid-card and your upper mid-card. Because I do believe that Ricochet, AJ, and Roman, Shane is currently mid-card feud. I would just call that, upper mid-card. These are my, if this is a New Japan show, these are my matches that are going to get 25 minutes to tell me a good story.
Yeah.
As opposed to my first set of matches that only got 10 to 15.
They're the last matches before the title matches.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So then what would you consider lower mid-card? Would you consider that like
in
the tag titles?
I was going to say, in 2019, the tag titles, the U.S. title, depending on who holds it, the Intercontinental title.
Well, so I think we both agree that Styles Ricochet is upper mid-card right now.
Yeah.
Both of the tag titles have real genuine storylines going on. The Planeteers versus Heavy Machinery in the New Day is real. It's not something that's been booked overnight. It's been building for months.
Oh, and I loved the promo work on Tuesday. Like I loved the shots at Xavier and Big E. Like, what the fuck have y'all been doing? Like, yeah, we know Kofi's great. He's the champ, and that's awesome. But what y'all scrubs been doing?
And the shots at Rowan.
Everybody
leaves
you were Bray's bitch, then you were Harper's bitch, now you're Brian's bitch. Like, who is you?
And then if you go back to Raw, the Usos and the Revival quietly have had a 3-month feud.
Oh, yeah. It's just, you know, 3 months ago, nobody gave a shit what the Revival were doing because you didn't have to care.
This is the positive, and again, I'm not trying to advocate for my man. Everybody who listens to the show knows I'm a Shane Mark, and I promise I'm not trying to advocate. But the one positive of him being on TV is he single-handedly has elevated the Revival, Drew, and Elias.
Well, I would say the Revival and Drew more than Elias. Elias was always on the show. He just was always doing meaningless shit. Now he's on the show doing shit for seemingly some meaning. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The Revival are the big beneficiaries because, as it turns out, they're the Mean Street Posse, only like good wrestlers.
Well, technically, they're P. Gas and Rodney, and Drew is Joey Abs.
Yeah, but like that's kind of a disrespect to the Revival because P. Gas and Rodney were terrible.
This is a good point. But in 2019, everybody a good wrestler, but just people don't have charisma. So.
I guess that's true.
If Rodney and Pete Gas would have debuted in 2019, they'd be wrestling 4 stars somewhere in Poughkeepsie. That's just the way the business is nowadays.
Man. For those of you that don't know what the Mean Street Posse is, YouTube it, y'all. You'll laugh.
Hilarity for days.
Preppy 90s.
In fact, you guys want to go watch a good Shane match in a match that encompasses the Mean Street Posse perfectly? Test versus Shane McMahon, love her or leave her. You, that will be one of the best 30 minutes you'll spend in your day.
Well, because you'll understand all of the important Shane McMahon tropes pre-2015.
Yes, 100%.
Literally every key Shane trope. Test, stooges, flying off shit.
Yep.
Random implementation of hardcore elements.
Yep. Yep. The stupid little which way did he go little yep. shuffle.
Shuffle yep. step. Yep. The themed jersey.
That's right. I forgot he started the jersey.
The only yeah. thing that he didn't have back then is that was so long ago. That was back when he was still rocking No Chance in Hell.
Oh, he didn't have a theme yet.
That was free Here Comes the Money. Because Here Comes the Money was specifically when he turned against Vince for the first
WCW.
Time.
WCW, yeah.
Now he needed his own theme. He couldn't be No Chance in Hell anymore.
And don't forget, he wasn't the shooter he is nowadays, because apparently Shane is a real-life shooter with the punches and the triangle chokes yeah. and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. No. No, back then he was just fighting to keep Stephanie from marrying Test. Only for Stephanie to have secretly eloped with Triple H.
Talk about a double turn. Shane hated Test, but then they become best friends, and then she, who he was fighting to leave to get away from Test, ends up turning on all of them to get with Triple. Boy, that you want to talk about convoluted.
Oh, the McMahon-Helmsley era.
But we complain about storylines in 2019. Go back and explain that to somebody.
Oh, man. But it was some hilarious television.
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing TV. It wouldn't work in 2019. No. Nope. In 1998, it worked perfectly.
Well, because in 1998, we had GTV, GTV, GTV.
So what was your favorite GTV real quick? What was your favorite one? Do you remember your favorite?
Oh, my favorite GTV is definitely when it was revealed that Eddie was cheating on China.
You took it out of my mouth.
That's definitely the best one. Yeah, when he gets out of the shower with the two girls and China just power bombs the shit out of him right then and there.
So good. So a couple days ago, I told you we're going to go all over the rails, guys. A couple of days ago, I retweeted this thread that kind of laid out all of the major interesting storylines that the women's division that was pitched but just didn't go through. One of them apparently was China was going to win the WWE Championship, but she was going to do Playboy. So Vince said, you can't do both. You're either going to be WWE Champion or you're going to do Playboy. And she chose Playboy. Yeah, okay. No words needed. So, let's move on.
Rest in peace, Joni. We love you. Like, that's being legitimate. We love
yeah.
you.
Yeah. I hope you're resting in peace, because you lived a rough life and you deserve some peace.
And we love you.
Forever. Anything in Dallas happened this past week?
You know, I was told that a company that we both respect very, very much
indeed.
Had a show there, and some of our good colleagues were part of the press junket. So first and foremost, congrats to our boys, Josh and Jeremy, for working the press junket down in Dallas for the G1 special. Very well deserved, y'all.
Should I tell my secret?
I mean, you can always tell secrets. I will never.
I don't want to say it because I don't want to take away from anybody, but I also had a press pass. I just couldn't go because I had to work.
You and your workings.
I'm telling you. But yes, so Josh, Jeremy, I would have seen you guys down there because it was all ready to go. I was all signed up. Greg cooked me up. But, you know, I had to work on July 4th weekend, so hooray for me. Nonetheless, yes, the G1 Climax first show was in Dallas, and it was just the A block. Couldn't be the B block because AEW continues to not let their wrestlers wrestle on TV for other companies. So Moxley can't wrestle on TV in America with New Japan. But okay, whatever. But it was just the A block, and I didn't watch it. I heard it was a good show. New Japan always is a good wrestling show. They're a great wrestling show.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about this because you know me and you know the theme of our show. You know our show is about giving you a different perspective and pointing out the things nobody else will point out. But I have some hesitancy with this because I don't want to seem like I'm kicking somebody when they're down or I'm disrespecting something or whatnot. But it needs to be talked about only because of the hypocrisy if it was on the other side. The G1 Climax in Dallas did not have a good turnout.
No, it was pretty pitiful.
There were multiple low, not only upper bowl, lower bowl sections with that were not even halfway full. Let's be modest. And that's disappointing for multiple reasons. Number one, New Japan's American expansion was supposed to be big because New Japan was, until AEW, the second biggest company in the world. And they have stars that, you have to give credit, thanks to Ring of Honor, have been seen in American audiences now for a few years.
Well, and I think it's also disappointing because you bring up AEW. It's disappointing because if we're honest and realistic...
Call a spade, Kyle.
If those guys were still on the roster, that show would have sold out.
In half a day. Yeah,
absolutely. That's just it. Like, you look at how quickly the shows that AEW is running are selling out. And I know some of that is the shiny new factor, but a lot of it is also star power. And you realistically look at all of the star power that they had, if those stars were still actively doing New Japan and, like, Marty was still actively doing New Japan, that show sells out.
Well, so I think it's twofold. Number one, I think it's, and this is going to sound really xenophobic, but I'm trying to be as honest as possible. I don't know that we as a country and as a fan base are really truly ready in mass to watch a strictly all Japanese show, pretty much all Japanese show, everywhere in the country.
That's a fair argument.
Right, we're in Dallas, and Dallas is a very progressive city, but it's still Dallas. We're still in the South, and that's just, this isn't Chicago. This isn't New York. This isn't Philly. This isn't the wrestling hotbed those cities are. Dallas is a great wrestling city, as is Houston, but they're not like those other cities, so I don't know. That's number one. Number two is, you mentioned the other guys, right? The interesting thing is, All In sold out like crazy, instantly. Double or Nothing sold out like crazy, instantly. All Out sold out like crazy, instantly. Fighter Fest in Daytona and Fight for the Fallen in Jacksonville didn't sell out. So is it really just strictly where you're booking it?
I mean, I think market always has to definitely play a certain role in that sort of situation because, like, all of the things that you just said, like the major cities for wrestling, those gates are going to sell because those gates always sell. Also, you have to think about from a travel point of view. What are cities that people want to just actively go be a tourist in? And, like, no disrespect to the city of Dallas, because I got nothing against the city of Dallas. But
Dallas,
like,
sucks, but I'm from Houston, so I'm supposed to say that.
But, like, if I'm writing out my list of cities that I need to go travel and visit, Dallas ain't on my list, like, anywhere near the top. Like, there's nothing drawing me to want to go to Dallas. Now, would it be easy to go to Dallas? Absolutely, because it's one of the biggest cities in the country, so, like, 100% I could easily get to Dallas.
I think that's the home of Southwest. I think that's where Southwest, they're...
I want to say it's either there or Houston, so you live in Houston. If it's not there, it is Dallas.
Yeah, it's Dallas. Okay, so that's a very fair point. Dallas isn't a destination town necessarily for wrestling. But here's my point to that. Dallas got a mil and 1.2 mil, something like that? It's top 10 in the nation easy, right? Y'all can't fill 10,000 seats with just Dallas Indians or whatever they call themselves?
But very few events can, man. Very few events can. I hear exactly what you're saying.
I guess so, man. Yeah.
But I'll give you an example. Minor league sports are an example of what you're talking about. There are minor league sports teams in cities like Dallas and Houston and Charlotte and everywhere. But the reason I'm picking cities like that is that, like, you know, 1.2 million, 2, 3 million people if you include just the metro area. So, like, lots of fucking people. But, like, minor league sports teams don't sell out games in those cities on the regular. You're not packing 10,000 people in.
But they don't have stars like New Japan does. All I've been told for the past 2 years is we're in a wrestling boom. But all I see is every show has empty seats, even WWE. So, like, what is it? Are we really in a boom?
Well, I think when people say that we're in a boom, they have different definitions for what that means.
Okay.
Now, one reason I think people say we're in a boom is if you want to find high quality wrestling content, it's never been easier. There's a half a dozen companies that are producing high quality content, even if they're companies that we might not necessarily care for, or they might not be our cup of tea. Like, they're producing high quality content. It's very easy to find.
GCW's had a pay-per-view in somebody's backyard. Like, that's the thoughtest shit I've ever seen. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so like the content is out there. Also, from a monetary perspective, wrestlers are making more money than in most comparable eras. Okay. But some of that is because online merchandising sales have really opened up a huge avenue for them.
Yeah.
And that allows you to do what we talk about here on The Edge all the time. Put your money where, you know, your mouth is, so to speak, and support the things that you say you stand for. But I don't think that that necessarily always also means that every show in every city is sold out. Because at the end of the day, while it might be an overall boom, this is still a niche form of entertainment. And niche forms of entertainment are always going to have, you know, gate struggles for non-major events in huge, huge markets.
Yeah, man, but that's the G1's fault.
You're right. You're right. I'm willing to say I personally chalk this up to an unfortunate reality check for the company in terms of it is an unfortunate byproduct of a mass exodus of the very specific talents that they were relying on for the American expansion. Because the talents that they lost were all specifically talents that New Japan had been on record as saying, you know, these are guys that we, like, are really going to kind of lean heavily on as we try to expand into North America.
Yeah.
All of those guys, for the most part, left. And you've only got a handful remaining to continue to try to, like, cull that.
It's not even a handful, really. I mean, unless we're speaking of Americans, there's barely any. They're still foreigners, and they're still Caucasian males, you know, Saber and Switchblade and, you know, and some others. But for the most part, I can't think of naming American Lance Archer and Moxley now. But Moxley is signed AEW, so can't do regular stuff. But they don't have anybody.
Yeah, you're right. And so, I think that in a lot of ways, it's like, okay, well, now that you're not, you know, going to have those guys as a potential draw anymore, you're not going to necessarily be able to fill 10,000. 5,000 is more realistic.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that if they would have, and this is, I know how you feel about this company, but do you think if they would have, it would still keep and put emphasis on the Ring of Honor team up, and they would have put some Ring of Honor stars? And I know you're saying no, but let me explain why I think it would change the game. And again, a lot of the times it comes out to xenophobia. To give you an example, when the Affordable Care Act first dropped, when they were calling it Obamacare, people wouldn't sign up for it. When they called it the Affordable Care Act, 70% of the same people signed up for it, just the name. If they come to the show under the guise of Ring of Honor, as crazy and as ridiculous and as xenophobic and racist as it is, I think they're more apt to come to the show than just strictly New Japan Pro Wrestling. And that's terrible, but I think there is some credence to that.
The only reason I'm adamant that the answer is no is because Ring of Honor can't fill a 10,000-seat arena either on their own.
Yeah, they have no stars.
Because here's the thing. People that want to throw Madison Square Garden at me, let me tell you something. I know plenty of people that bought a ticket to that show in Madison Square Garden hoping that those guys were going to be there. So that's all I'm saying is if we're talking about gates for shows of like tens of thousands of people and we're talking about shows that weren't headlined by one of the Elite or multiple members of the Elite, I don't see a lot of company track records being too great on that.
I don't think Ring of Honor, well, it's very clear Ring of Honor can't sell out by themselves. Shit. But I think that
they
the best
sell
option
out Baltimore by themselves.
Man, look, that's well, you can't sell out your backyard, dog. That's bad. I think the best option for both of those companies, and if you want to be honest with RevPro, is for RevPro, New Japan, and Ring of Honor to merge and make one big company and just work through all three spots. Because they all need each other.
You ain't lying.
New Japan needs the access to American television, to American stadiums and arenas and things of that nature. New Japan, Ring of Honor needs the stars, and since Ring of Honor is so shitty, they need a trusting partner, so that's where RevPro comes in. And RevPro can use her up from both companies.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe about the RevPro thing, Taven didn't defend at Wrestle Kingdom this year. Sabre did. For the RevPro British Heavyweight Championship. So put all three together, and you got a legitimate number three after AEW.
Oh, God, Ring of Honor is such a fucking clusterfuck. Jesus Christ.
It's bad.
Oh, when you look at where that company was 4 years ago compared to where that company is right now, Jesus.
Well, mismanagement. Well, the writing was on the wall when they completely allowed their guys to do another show under their guys, but they realized that they sold out without the branding of Ring of Honor. All In was the nail in the coffin.
Well, I mean, realistically, the writing was on the wall for Ring of Honor 10 years ago when they were NXT before NXT.
Fair enough.
When you started looking and every time you turned around, the next big Ring of Honor star would show up on WWE and you're like, oh, fuck, they signed another one. Oh, fuck, they signed another one. Oh, fuck,
You know how pissed Joe Koff's going to be if Damian Priest gets huge? That was like the one guy they had who could have been something. And they're like, all right, we'll see you later. We got shows to break down. So do you want to break them all down or you just want to break down Extreme Rules?
Let's at least go down the cards of the other two, and then we'll break down the Extreme Rules card.
So I'm going to lay out the card for Evolve first. Then this is Evolve's 10th anniversary celebration. So this is
and y'all, this is a huge show for a number of reasons, not least of which because this show is going to be on WWE Network, and like that is a big fucking deal. whether you support it or don't support it, like the fact that an indie promotion is getting a prime time, essentially the takeover time slot on a pay-per-view weekend, that is a big fucking deal, y'all.
And commercials on Raw.
Yeah, yeah, and SmackDown, because they had commercials last night for it, too.
Yes, that's so crazy. Like,
big time promotion of the fact that this is a thing, and advertising all of the stars that are currently with the company that have wrestled for Evolve at one point or another. Like, props to them, because Evolve deserves it because they're a wonderful fucking company. But props to them for getting this spot.
100%. And boy, Gabe Sapolsky, man, my man.
Yeah, man. Fucking Gabe.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to run down the card. I normally like to run down from the lowest match to the highest, but I'm going to go the other way because we're not breaking down the card.
Sounds good.
So the NXT Championship will be defended. Adam Cole will be facing Akira Tozawa, a.k.a. Brad, let Carl tell you. There is a winner-takes-all championship match between the Evolve Champion and Austin Theory, who the world needs to see and will see, versus the WWE champion, JD Drake. That's going to be a huge match because both those guys are super underrated and need to be seen by a majority of people. The Evolve Tag Team Championship match is between AR Fox, those of you who watch Lucha Underground might know him as Dante Fox, and Leon Ruff, versus Eddie Kingston and Joe Gacy, who are the champs. You have a Catch Point reunion match between the WWE Cruiserweight Champion Drew Gulak and the original bro, Matt Riddle. You have a grudge match between Anthony Henry and NXT superstar Arturo Ruiz, who you used to know as Adrian the Brazilian dude.
It's okay.
You have a special challenge match between Steve Corino's baby boy, Colby Carino, and NXT superstar Babatunde. Babatunde is that huge 7-foot dude who I believe is Indian, maybe Pakistani, but he's huge and he's massively, massively improved. You have Sean Maluta, NXT guy, versus Stephen Wolfe, versus Harlem Bravado, versus Kurt Stallion. Look at that name, Kurt Stallion, remember that name, in a Fatal 4-Way match. You have Anthony Green versus Josh Briggs. Remember that name, Josh Briggs. So you have a wonderful mix of Evolve mainstays like Eddie Kingston and Austin Theory. You have the WWE names coming back. And then you got the names that are coming up like your Kurt Stallions and your Josh Briggs and your Colby Carinos. This is a perfect mix for a group of guys who deserves the rub. So I'm so hyped for them.
Yeah, and it's going to be a great show. If you've never had the chance to see, if you've never had the chance to see a real indie show, y'all, go out of your way to watch this tonight, on Saturday, because Evolve is a real indie promotion, and that's an authentic indie experience. So if you've never had the opportunity, if you're just a strictly WWE person and you've never actually seen what indie wrestling is all about, give this Evolve show a shot.
You will not be disappointed, and no. I was skeptical. And shout out to Caleb, because Caleb made me go to my first Evolve show, and it was Cassius Ohno, aka Chris Hero's last indie match, right before the Takeover San Antonio, and it's one of the best shows I've ever seen. So I guarantee you, you're gonna watch this. If you watch the show, you'll be happy and appreciate what they do. Now, at the same time, there is a show going on in Jacksonville, Florida, under the AEW banner, the Fight for the Fallen show, which is a charity show where apparently not all the proceeds, but a portion of the proceeds now will be going to victims of gun violence in Jacksonville. So I am going to, much as I did with the Evolve show, run down the list, but I'm going to run it from, again, unlike how I normally do it, from the top to the bottom. So I believe the main event of this show is going to be Cody and Dustin Rhodes versus the Young Bucks in a tag match. You have Kenny Omega wrestling Shima from the Strong Hearts. You have Brandi Rhodes finally wrestling a match against the Demon Bunny Alley.
I didn't know she still wrestled.
Yeah, Brandy spent all that money on all those wrestling outfits. She's gonna wrestle. By the way, Brandy's an improved wrestler, but she's not the greatest. But she has an excellent spear.
Good.
Credit where credit is due. Her spear is awesome. You have Hangman Page versus Kip Sabian. This is gonna be a good match. Probably the match that'll steal the show. You have Pentagon Jr. and Phoenix, the Lucha Brothers, versus SCU, Scorpio Sky, and Frankie Kazarian.
Oh, that'll be a good match.
Yes, yes. The flips in that match was, oh, the flippy dudes of all flippy dudes. And of course, what they're advertising as a big moment in the show, Chris Jericho is scheduled to appear, and he is supposed to have a live microphone, quote unquote.
Joy, Rapture.
Joy and Rapture. I love that. The two matches on the pre-show, the buy-in, are probably two of the matches I'm most looking forward to the most. You have MJF, match with Jacob Friedman, Sean Spears, a.k.a. Ty Dillinger, and Sammy Guevara versus the hardcore trio icons, or whatever you want to call them, Joey Janela, Darby Allin, and Jimmy Havoc. So that's going to be a big mess of fun. And you have the librarian, Peter Avalon, with the other librarian, Leva Bates, versus the guy who finally gets his match, Sonny Kiss.
Go, Sonny, go. Go, Sonny, go. Go, Sonny, go.
That's going to be fun. Yes, I'm so looking forward to Sonny getting some shine. So, thoughts on that card?
I want Sonny to win.
Of course.
Because I just want Sonny to win. Other than that, I mean, pretty typical fare, I'd say, probably from AEW. Looks like they're all probably going to be at least decent to watchable matches. I don't have really high expectations for this show. Just, like, nothing against it, the charity aspect or anything like that, but because it is a charity show, I'm not seeing this as a show that's going to, like, build any kind of crazy things or give us any kind of, like, previews of All Out, but I mean, it should be fun and watchable. I'll watch it on probably delay because I do plan on watching the Evolve show live.
I'll watch it Sunday morning.
Same.
Yeah, right before I watch Extreme Rules. My only complaint about the show is my complaint, same complaint I had about Fyter Fest. It's that, and. Again, what you said is absolutely right. Both these shows, Fyter Fest and the Fight for the Fallen, are free shows to the public, American public at least. And they're special shows for certain reasons. Fyter Fest went with the CEO Gaming, their big festival that they had. This is a special charity show. But AEW essentially has, if without these two shows, nothing between Double or Nothing and All Out. So these are the only two shows that we can discern what's going to happen between the two shows, right? Without Double or Nothing, Double or Nothing gave us our main two matches.
Yeah.
So we know Moxley and Omega, and we know Hangman versus Jericho. Cool. At least give us a reason to care about the rest of the card. And they try to do that with the Fyter Fest with Sean Spears and Cody. But I would have liked for these shows to be more cohesive from a booking standpoint so we could have some ideas as to what's going to happen at All Out. And it's not just they're booking like indie shows. And what I mean by that is if you ever go to an indie shows normally are booked once a month and they just make random matches so they can fill them out how they want to keep you interested because they're not selling you, not selling the house based on television. Or based on storylines, or selling a house based on interest in a match you could see. Well, you guys have television in October. Give us something cohesive so we can sink our teeth in, because everybody doesn't want to just watch cool matches.
Well, and give us something cohesive on these shows so that I don't have to, like, scour your YouTube channels for all of the storytelling. Because, like, even if I had the time to do that, I want to do other things with that time.
Absolutely. And that's not me saying this card is going to be bad or at all. I'm going to watch the card, number one. And I'm sure there's three matches I can tell you, four matches up top of my head, that I know I'm looking forward to. So this isn't me complaining. I just would like to see some cohesiveness. Because part of the fun of being a fan is before a big... What's the one thing we do right after WrestleMania ends?
Think about what's going to be in the main event for next year.
I'm saying, right? We try to book the card. So at least give us something so we can try to understand what the card All Out will be. Because this is your... That's the WrestleMania, I'm assuming, right?
I would have to think so.
That's not only it's their biggest show, but that's also the show leading into television. So that's not going to be a 4 or 5 match card. It's going to at least have 6, 7, 8, 9 matches. Give us some idea. What's up with tag teams, tag team belts? What's up with the women's championship? Is there a mid-card title? What's up with these wins and losses mattering? How is that going to work with this and that? What is MJF going to do? What is this person or that person? Where is Kong? You know, like, where is Kylie Rae and Britt Baker? Like, these are things that I'm interested in, but unless you watch social, you don't know, and I'd like to see something more, and these are the chances where they can do that.
Exactly.
So, I'm off my high horse. I just wanted to let that be known, that this is where you can build your fan base. These are the shows. These are build your fan base shows.
Give us a reason to watch.
That's all I'm saying. Because I'm going to watch. So give me a reason to keep watching.
Thanks.
So, the main event of the evening, and boy, Extreme Rules gets more and more convoluted every year.
Well, it's one of those gimmick pay-per-views that, like, it amazes me every year that it seems like they wisely realize one of the gimmick pay-per-views should be replaced. And yet they never correctly understand that this is one of the gimmick pay-per-views that needs to go away.
I don't dislike Extreme Rules. It's the issue with it's just this year in particular, because other years it's booked fine. The issue with this year is it's not even that the matches don't make sense. It's that the match choices are... Well, we'll get into it. We'll talk about it as we get into the card. So I'm going to do the inverse. Then I'm going to start from the bottom up. Okay? So the first match we have listed is the match where somebody finally picked a fight with Aleister Black. And that man is the new James Bond villain himself, Cesaro. So if you enjoy seeing the Dutch and the Swiss kill each other, this is going to be that match.
I'm going to pick... I'm going to pick Aleister in this match because it doesn't make sense to me to have all this time spent building him up only to have him lose to Cesaro in this match. So I'm going to pick Aleister Black.
Totally agree. He's essentially re-debuting here, and for him to lose will really kill his momentum. And I love, from a wrestling perspective, that it's Cesaro, but I was secretly, and I know you're going to hate me for this, but I was secretly hoping it was Randy Orton.
I mean, the only reason I wouldn't hate you for that is because I still would have expected Aleister Black to win.
Yes.
And I'm fine with watching Randy Orton get kicked in the face.
But with that being said, what are we going to tell Randy Orton today?
Go away, Randy Orton. Just go away.
The next match finally got some heat behind it. After weeks of stupid tests of strengths and arm wrestling contests, we finally got some heat between Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley in a last man standing match.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go with Braun Strowman because even though this angle finally has a little bit of heat, Bobby Lashley still bores me to tears. So I'm going to pick Braun by default.
I'm going to flip. I'm going to pick Lashley because they're finally starting to show that they're trying to invest in Bobby by making him just a and making him the black Drew McIntyre. And you know what? I can get behind that if you're consistent with it. Because Bobby Lashley is a certified badass in real life.
That's
let it be that Bill. If you let him be that badass in wrestling, and I get he can't talk, whatever, that's cool. But let him be consistent. I wouldn't mind seeing them run a Seth versus Bobby 1 month program because Bobby can go in the ring. He looks great. He's just boring and can't talk. What can you do?
Fair assessment.
Now we have the last match. It's not a title match. You have the no-holds-barred match between the best in the world, Shane McMahon, and Drew McIntyre versus the big dog, Roman Reigns, and The Undertaker.
Well, first things first, Shane McMahon would have been pissed at that terrible intro and would have made you do it over again.
Shane, don't pay my bills.
Fortunately for you, I'm not Shane, so I won't make you do it over again. But, I mean, obviously I'm not picking against the team that has the fucking Undertaker on it.
So, deadass, I really considered picking Shane and Drew because this is the type of shit WWE does where they'll build those two guys up and let Shane and Drew steal the match. But no, that's
fair.
But Shane and Drew won Monday, so 50-50 booking has to it always wins. So, Taker, but what I think is going to happen is Shane's going to take the pin because I think we see Taker versus Drew at SummerSlam.
I mean, I'm not necessarily here for that, and by not necessarily, I mean I'm not interested in that, but it's a thing that they could do, and I won't begrudge them.
I'm not necessarily here for that, and by not necessarily, I mean not at all.
I'm not interested in that in any way.
I get it.
But I know that there are people out there, Rob, who are here for everything that the dead man does. So I'm going to let it go.
That'll actually be a dope match because Drew can carry Taker to a nice big man match. Drew is built like Taker in that he's huge, but he wrestles like a cruiser. So Taker has wrestled his whole career as a 6'10" cruiserweight. So, you know.
Yeah, but he's also, like, north of 50 with a replaced hip.
Look, we're not talking semantics, okay?
You're not talking semantics.
No, you're actually that's absolutely factual. I'm very... Oh, can you see Taker taking the Claymore kick? My God. Okay.
I see Taker getting concussed in the middle of the ring.
Oh, God. Drew's going to take care of him, I hope.
He's going to try. No, Drew is going to try his absolute best. I do not, as much as I hate on Drew McIntyre, I do not think he's an unsafe worker or anything of the sort. Yeah. I don't think Drew is going to intentionally hurt Undertaker. I think Taker is so old and busted and beat up that I could totally see his ass take the Claymore wrong and leave with a fucking concussion.
God. Oh, please don't let that happen.
Like,
oh, man.
I could see him accidentally lean into the kick instead of away from it.
Oh, God. Please don't let that happen. Oh, man. That's the last thing we need to see.
I agree, but, like, it's a legitimate possibility, and that's why I'm not here for Taker stuff anymore.
Yeah. No, it's a real concern. I completely agree with you. I think Taker's time to go was as... I'll even give Taker 31 because he had to get his R back. But after the Bray Wyatt feud, that should have been it. So I don't.
I mean, I'll forever feel cheated out of an Undertaker moment because I was in Orlando and they went out of their way to make that seem like that was the end of the Undertaker.
Yeah.
And then they just threw it away.
Yeah. And all the hate Roman took for that, too. And, yeah.
Yep. That's just it. Like,
He took that massive heel rub because they felt like he was the person that finally retired Undertaker, and then just totally undid it.
But you know what? In a Gato style long term booking trick, the reason Taker's helping Roman is because they both own the yard now. They're both co-owners of the yard.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I just can't with any of that. But okay, let's move on to the title matches.
The biggest property dispute in history, in wrestling history. Well, and talk about matches you could care less about. The WWE Cruiserweight Championship between Drew Gulak and Tony Nese. And I know you love Gulak, but Tony Nese is a good wrestler who nobody cares about.
Nobody gives a shit about Tony Nese, but I will pretend to care about this match for Drew Gulak because that is a 205 that I believe in. For a better 205, Drew-05 Live, Drew Gulak wins this match.
I love that Gulak is the champ. This is just for Clive because nobody else is going to really care about this part. Who's the next challenger? It's got to be Oni. There's nobody else as a face but Oni. And Gulak and Oni and Gulak will go out there and try to kill themselves. So that'll be fun.
That'll be a great, like, we talk about strong style. That'll be a great, like, strong-ass match. That's going to be stiff as fuck.
Stiff as fuck. Talk about stiff as fuck. Evolve when Riddle and Gulak and Gulak wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Bring your ice. We're the young boys, the young lions, the young boys with the cold sweat.
Shit, I'm gonna have my knees iced up for them, because my knees hurt just thinking about the lack of knee pads in that hard ass hitting match.
Good point. Cool. So we have the Raw Tag Team Championship match between the Brain Busters and the Samoan SWAT team. Who you got?
Well, part of me wanted to give it to the Samoan SWAT team because, like, feels like they're due for a win.
Sure.
But the Brainbusters just got these titles. So, like, I don't know how I feel about shotgunning these belts. So I'm going to pick the Samoan SWAT team to win the match, but not the titles.
That's probably the right answer. I didn't even think about that option. So I picked the Samoan SWAT team in the chair shot picks because they're gonna run this back at SummerSlam and that'll be the final for this feud. And I think they needed a way to get one more month out of it. And then the Usos are gonna get fed to the Viking Raiders. So they had to find a way to get to August. So I don't see the Revival cheating. And the Usos getting one more match out of this because the Revival worked for Shane. So, let the Usos win, get the rub. Let the Revival get their heat back. Run it back at SummerSlam. Have the Viking Raiders come and destroy the Usos. And you got your feud with the fall.
Yeah. I just feel like that's the best way to go about it. Have Usos somehow eke out a victory, but it's one of those weird victories, like maybe they win by count out or some shit.
Yeah.
Where the Revival don't lose the belts, and it's like, yo, we beat you. And you know we should be the champs.
So, but we both agree that this ends at SummerSlam, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Okay. And you know what?
A lot of things are going to end in SummerSlam. And I mean, things always do end at SummerSlam. But this year, especially, a lot of things are going to end at SummerSlam. Because October is going to be a hard reset on a lot of shit, y'all. Like,
good point.
When they debut on Fox and they move back to Fridays and blah, blah, blah. Like, October is going to be a real hard reset for a lot of shit.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. That's a very good point. That's a damn good point. So we got the other tag team championship match, the WWE tag team championships, between the Planeteers, Brian and Rowan, versus the New Day of Big E and Xavier Woods, versus Heavy Machinery, Tucker and Otis. Triple threat match.
Huh. Yeah. See, this is another one where I feel like the long term of this arc is to somehow get the belts on Heavy Machinery.
A word. Okay.
So, like, that's kind of where I'm at with it. That being said, I feel like one of the members of the New Day takes the pin in this match, and that's how we get the eventual rematch between Heavy Machinery and Planeteers.
You know, I was actually thinking the opposite. I was thinking that we were going to get the blow-off between Brian and Rowan and the New Day. But Heavy Machinery does, they're probably the next up. So that's a good point. But anyway, we both say the Planeteers win this match. Brian's going to figure out a way to get out of it.
Yeah.
Next, we have the WWE United States Championship match between Ricochet, the champion, versus AJ Styles, the face that runs the place, with the club.
Well, because of the recent heel turn and the addition of the club, I'm picking AJ to win the title in the short term, because we've got to set up Ricochet to overcome all three of them and Chase. Because much like AJ is a babyface who really just can't fucking talk, Ricochet is a babyface who really just can't fucking talk very well. And as a result, he's more effective as a chaser than as a champion. So AJ needs to kick his ass, and then he needs to be the underdog and overcome that obstacle, because he's a teeny tiny little flippy dude.
Ricochet is a worse talker than AJ, and that's saying a lot.
It's saying a lot.
And AJ is actually an effective talker. He's just not good. Mm-hmm. So this is what I mean by convoluted. And this convolution makes sense, but it's just so out there. You have a 2-on-1 handicap match for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship between Bayley the Champ against Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. So I have this whole match booked.
I hate this feud so much. I hate this feud so
much. I love it. I love it because, number one, Bayley looks like a heel, and I'm here for that. Number two, can't wait for Alexa to fuck Nikki. I don't mean the way you think it.
I know how you meant it. I know how you meant it. But no, like, I hate the feud because, like...
You don't like Bayley and Alexa together.
It's not even so much that I don't like Bayley and Alexa together. Like, because a lot of it for the last few weeks has been Bayley and Nikki. I just can't with Bayley on the microphone. Like, nothing she says connects for me. And it makes it to where I don't really give a shit about her when she's in a major position like she is right now as champion. Because I'm just like, oh my God, that means she's got to talk. And I don't want to hear her fucking talk, like, ever.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's kind of where I'm at with it. Now, because of the nature of the match, I feel like Bayley got a win, and then Alexa got to fuck Nikki.
Yep.
And then it's that.
So, on the chair shot picks, I picked Alexa and Nikki, but I didn't think it all the way through. So what I think is going to happen is this. What you just said, Alexa's going to fuck Nikki because some kind of way Nikki might get rolled up or something. And that leads to their blow of a SummerSlam.
Oh, but I don't even think it even has to be a roll-up. I think it could be something as simple as Nikki knocks Alexa out the way and then eats a Bayley to belly.
Okay.
And takes, like, a legitimate pin. And it's like... Yeah, she lost the match, but she lost the match saving Alexa. But Alexa's like, fuck you. You lost me my fucking title match.
Yeah, absolutely. And the caveat I think that I'm sure people have talked about, but the one thing that I think you'll agree with me, in their little terrible promo battle on Raw.
Oh, it was so bad.
Nikki mentioned that Bayley needs a friend like she has with Alexa. We have the return of Sasha, and more importantly, we have the return of the boss. Sasha gonna turn on Bayley and want that title.
I mean, that's fine.
That's fine. Boss Sasha is better than face Sasha anyway.
And we've been wanting a genuine Bayley Sasha feud for 2 years now.
I'm on board with it as long as Sasha is like dialed in and not Sasha on her fuck shit. Because you know that's how fair. She gets when she's on her fuck shit.
Yeah, but I think she should be dialed in because, number one, she's coming back to a title program. Number two, they gave her time off and she got paid and she was able to do everything she wanted to do. She went to Japan and hung out with Miko Satomura. She wrestled with the Joshis for a minute. She had to do a vacation. She got a new dog. Like, everything you want, you got. You know what I mean? And from a kayfabe standpoint, think about this. If you're Sasha Banks, from a strictly kayfabe standpoint, you guys lose the title to the Iconics, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the very first thing Bayley does afterwards? Oh, I'm on my own.
Yeah.
I'm going to go wrestle on my own and go get the title.
So much about, friends.
Yeah, right? What about me? We're best friends. What about me?
Well, not only are we best friends, but I confessed how much I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And
had people thinking that we were going to be lesbian lovers and stuff.
Yeah. Made you bae.
Okay. So we have championship top championship matches. We have the WWE championship match. Then I'm surprised it doesn't have a stip.
So many other matches on the card have stips.
Good point. You have Kofi Kingston, your World Heavyweight Champion, or WWE World Heavyweight Champion, versus the battle rapper himself. No, not Dolph. Samoa Joe, fool.
Oh, that's right. Samoa Joe.
Did they wrestle that many times? You forgot?
Yeah, they did. I forgot. You know
Real
what?
Quick. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, you know what? This is just another time where it's just, I feel so bad for Joe because Joe is always a bridesmaid, never a bride. And he always comes out and like, he carries shit on the microphone and he impresses and he does all the heavy lifting. And then the time comes for the match and you know they're going to have him job out.
Somebody give Joe a ring, y'all.
Like, you know, I'm not saying that I want Kofi to lose because I don't, but like, give my man Joe a title.
This is a quick tangent, but one of the Twitter followers I follow all the time, it's 5deuce Trey 47 or something like that, but a great Twitter follow. He has the idea that at next year's Wild Mania, that they should have like the best promo guys in WWE do promo rap battles.
Ooh, I'm on board.
So I tweeted Wrestle Rap. Me and Wrestle Rap follow each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I tweeted Wrestle Rap, and I need to tweet Visionaries to have them actually talk to Wally about this. Because that'll be so... Can you imagine, like, an eight-person...
Joe versus Cena?
Joe versus Cena. Big E versus... I don't know. What? That'll be so dope, though. Would it not?
I'm on board. I'd take my money, shit.
Anyway, I would be willing to pick Joe if I didn't know October was on the horizon.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I want so badly for Joe to win the title, but at the same time, like, I just know it's not going to happen. So, like, Kofi's going to win. And let's talk about Big Breakfast.
All right. So, you got Biscuits and Gravy.
Mm-hmm.
A.K.A. Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans. In a mixed tag match against the man and her man, Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch. And this is, I'm going to read it exactly the way that Wrestling Inc. has it written. A winners take all Extreme Rules mixed tag match for the WWE Universal Championship and Raw Women's Championship. If Corbin and Evans lose, they never get to challenge Rollins and Lynch for their titles again. Did I set that up enough for you?
I've got several things to say.
I'm going to sit back and listen.
The first thing I'd like to say, and I'm sure this is probably not a popular opinion, but I don't care. I do not at all like Becky and Seth being together.
That's a more popular opinion than you think it is.
Jesus Christ. It is ruining both of them. Which is sad because they were both doing a pretty effective job of ruining themselves on their own. So, like, putting them together is just accelerating the decline. So that's the first thing I'm going to say. Second thing I want to say is these whole, if so-and-so loses, they never get blah, blah, blah. Again, stipulations are, you know, those are dumb. Those are real dumb. Like, it never works the way you want it to. And third, my prediction, because of the stipulation, is that, and I've made this prediction 3 months in a row, so I'm going to stick with it. Baron Corbin's going to hit that big snack, that big stack. Big Breakfast going to hit the big stack on Splins for the 1-2-3 and cost Seth and Becky the titles, and then Becky's going to beat the dog shit out of Seth. For so, costing her belt.
That's the most interesting play. Absolutely. This shit ain't happening.
I know it's not happening, but I'm going to make that prediction every month till the cows come home. Big Breakfast with the big stack.
So I do want to go to your point that I don't hate Seth and Becky together. The idea of that is a really dope idea.
It's a good idea. I don't like it in practice.
Well, it's not the practice that I don't like. It's they have no chemistry. That's the problem, in my opinion, is that they together don't have chemistry as a couple.
Not on
screen. They look like a big brother and his little sister.
Good example of like why just because you're real life couples doesn't mean you need to be TV couples. Charlotte and Andrade don't need to be on screen together.
Yeah.
Because Andrade and Zelina
have chemistry.
Have chemistry that works.
Same thing with Zelina and Aleister Black.
And honestly, Andrade and Zelina, because of our racist society, have chemistry that makes more sense to a white audience.
Oh, what, a Mexican and a Puerto Rican?
Well, the two Latinas, or the two Latinx people obviously belong together.
You're absolutely right.
But no, even beyond that, though, just legitimately, they have on-screen couple chemistry in a way that makes it to where obviously the two of them stay together. It's okay to be a real-life couple and be on screen together if you have couple chemistry. Triple H and Chyna had couple chemistry because part of that was because Chyna had a really unique look, but still, they had couple chemistry. Triple H and Steph had couple chemistry. Miz and Maryse have couple chemistry.
Edge and Lita.
Yeah, that works. It works in like just a perfect way. And so Seth and Becky does it. And like they might be a wonderful real life couple, and I'm sure they make each other very happy, and I think that's great. But like on screen, it's not magic.
And I think that's the problem. But I do think the ideology behind it is dope, because Becky's whole gimmick now is that she's essentially as good as a man is, to the point where she is the man. And so that power dynamic that she plays and she has, and I think the one positive of this is Seth has been willing and has happily played the bitch role, essentially, as they said in the promo last week with Maria, Mike and Maria, me and my bitch versus you and yours. Seth is cool taking a back seat to Becky. And that's, I think, the one redeeming thing of this whole storyline. Because had this been traditional wrestling and traditional WWE, then Becky would have been the damsel. Much like you mentioned about Sonny Kiss. Like, I don't want Sonny to be a damsel to his boyfriend. Like, Becky's the lead in the story. So, But yeah, I'm sick of, I'm ready for it to go. I'm ready for it to be done. And I'm curious to see where they go after this is over. Because on Monday, when Corbin and Lacey are done and they have no more championship opportunities, and it's just Rollins versus Becky not fighting their inverse doppelgangers, if you will, what's the play going to be? That's what I'm interested to see.
Well, and that kind of remains to be seen. I just hope that it's a decent show. I mean, it won't be bad. I just hope that it's above average.
I think it'll be above average because you have tons of matches that'll deliver, and you have some storylines that can legitimately be interesting. And just think about some of the moments that could happen. Sasha turning on Bayley is a moment that could be huge. Anytime Taker appears, I understand all of the issues with him wrestling, but every Taker appearance is always still noteworthy. I think Ricochet and AJ is going to possibly steal the show. Like, there are some cool matches. If Joe chokes out Kofi, come on, man, what can we do, you know? We never thought Joe would beat Finn for the NC title, and then he had to go to Lowell, Michigan on the house show. So Lowell, Massachusetts, but you know, so hey.
You know, that's true. That's true. But you ready to take him on out of here?
Yeah, I think we're good. I think I do want to mention again, LAX is a free agent, and Johnny Impact is reportedly done with Impact as well. So John Morrison might be coming.
Yo, home. Man, bring John Morrison back. Bring his wife with him.
Taya's still under contract.
Oh, well, you know, that's fine. Johnny, come home.
Yeah, but let's get out of here. I'm at It's Ray Cash on It's Ray Cash, R-E-Y-Z Mysterio, C-A-S-H on Twitter. Carl's at Outsider Curvin. The show's at Outsiders Edge CS. The company, the network is at thechairshot.com and Chairshot, where you
always use your head. It's and you can find website. Me on Twitter at Dr. S'mores, but follow Outsider Curvin because he's the best tweeter of us all. But realistically, y'all, as always, we want to just remind you that we here at the Outsider's Edge are a bunch of increasingly less young men out here doing the best we can trying to make it in this hard and unforgiving world. And sometimes we screw up. Sometimes life gets us and we don't record regularly. Sometimes we forget to record our intros or have to record the show multiple times or any number of things could happen. But no matter what, even if we made you feel some type of way, y'all, we just want you to remember that we're just out here chasing our dreams. And you got to respect that.
Yep, yep.
Because if you don't, we just don't give up.
Fuck.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch y'all next time.